flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Bob, it's time to go to our friend Jay Caulfield, Stanley Cup champion, brought to us by Tom's Watch Bar. Jay, you're with Bob and Joe, and yes, it's in that order. How are you?
Good, guys. Good morning.
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Yep, good. Well, I was just telling Austin, we were talking off air and talking about the cold weather, and I said, well, in Grand Forks, North Dakota, you could have temperatures like 20 below, but you'd have 20-plus mile-an-hour winds to go with it. That was brutal. That was the coldest place I've been.
Where did you grow up
in
again,
school.
Jay?
I grew up in Philly, though, Joe.
Philly, that's
Don't
right.
Hold that against me.
No, that's fine. All good. But how much time did you spend out in North Dakota? That sounds brutal.
I was there. Yeah, I was there 3 years in Grand Forks. 3 years in North Dakota.
What would you guys?
3 years in Minnesota.
What would you guys do at night out in North Dakota? Just drink beer?
No, honestly, it was a great camp. It was a great college town. Honestly, it really was. It was everybody just made, you just kind of enjoyed it. Then when the nice weather came around, then people really enjoyed it, you know. But it was a great college town, especially it's built around the hockey and football programs and everything that went with that. And but it was great that way. But I'm telling you, though, it was tough. That was cold in football when we were playing football out there. And you get in November, late November, it's a different kind of cold, you know, honestly, because the wind is so tough.
It's like Winnipeg.
It was enjoyable.
It's like Winnipeg where the Penguins
fly.
But I mean, there was a guy once, Paul Steigerwall, told me a story. You know, he's out there, and he's a place where they normally ice fish. And a guy walked by Paul, and he said to him, "Where are you going?" And he goes, "It's too cold to ice fish."
Too cold to ice fish.
So, I mean, do you know the coldest day I've ever felt for me? And this is weird to even bring this up. It was the media day for the Super Bowl when it was in Dallas.
I was then during the ice storm.
The ice storm. Remember that ice storm?
Yeah.
There was wind like at 30 miles an hour, and it was just ridiculous getting into the AT&T Stadium.
Jay, what was your favorite road trip in the NHL?
In the NHL? I would have to say always going when you go out west back then. Remember, it wasn't Florida. Florida teams weren't there yet in the early part. They came later in my career, but probably anytime you went to LA and things like that. But I think as far as getting out of the hockey, you know, the cold everywhere you went. But I think going into the normal, like the great places like Madison Square Garden or Boston, all the arenas like that, Toronto, Montreal, I like those. I like going into those buildings and what that was about, and how the fans were when you went into like a, you know, like the rink was ice, you know, street level when you walked into like to the Forum or Maple Leaf Gardens. I like that kind of thing. And going into Minnesota, I love playing in Minnesota because I went to school out there. That kind of thing. I loved all those places. But my favorite, probably playing in Philly, would still be just because of the atmosphere and the nastiness of all the people that were, you know, nasty out there whenever we went to games there. So that's surprising, isn't it? Isn't that surprising?
Yeah, that's shocking. Bob just told me a story last week. I was asking him about the late Sam Nover. He said at times Sam would be very picky in restaurants. I heard the same about Barrasso. Would he send back maybe the wine if it didn't taste right to him, or the steak? Would he be the guy at the table who would do that?
Tommy would be a guy like that. Yeah, but that was, you know, he was you. Hey, look, I like Tom. I own Tom, but that's what Tommy. That's what how Tom was. He was about that. If something wasn't to his liking, he would let everybody know. I'd be hesitant to send something back.
Me too.
Yeah, you know, same way I feel.
I'd be really polite about sending it back if I did.
Yeah, I mean, I feel almost embarrassed. Like, I'm sorry, but this.
Yeah.
You know.
I'd be afraid of what was coming back out to the table.
Sam was just, he snapped his fingers. Excuse me, miss, please. This steak? Come on. I asked for medium rare and it's not. Would you please tell the chef that it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Jay,
hard time doing that as well. But
how would it work at the team dinners? I don't know why I'm talking about this, but I find it fascinating. Would the whole entire team go? Would you break off into little groups? And then how do you decide on the check?
Yeah, no, that was the team dinner. You didn't do team dinner. You had your team you had your pregame meals, and the only time we had a team dinner was when it was like they're on a trip like they're on right now, right? So there might be one night that they say, let's go have a team dinner kind of thing. That was never. It was usually little group, you know, groups. Guys went with everybody. So when you mentioned Tom, I wasn't always at dinner with Tom. I was around like Mark Greinke or Kevin Stevens and Mario, like if that, or Rick Tocchet when he was here, those guys. There were certain groups of, you know, Gordy Dineen, just guys had little, maybe their roommate, whoever you're room with. Sometimes you did that in a group of, you know, 4 to 6 when we were playing. It might be a little bit different now, but I don't believe so. I think you go in small groups and maybe pick different places. And Tom would have been, like you said, I never was around Tom when he sent anything back. But when we were at team dinner, he was pretty, he could be that way. He absolutely would be that way. And just, it's the way his perception, that's his shtick. That's what he did. Right.
So
he's
always
that way.
I thought he was one of the most articulate people and great interviews,
for sure, though
sometimes he took it a little too personally, the questions. But I want to ask you about wine connoisseurs. I'm going to take Mario out of this conversation because I know how much he's into it. Who besides him? And like when you went out, was there a limit on how much wine in terms of pricing you can get? And if it went over that, and if you were obligated to pay, what would you do?
I don't think any. And back, and so even going further back, Mario brought the wine into the. In my opinion, Mario brought the wine into the group. Like, I mean, we were mainly beer drinkers and things like that, right? I mean, at that age, we were beer drinkers. And then if you went to bigger dinners, Mario was, and he does it in such a very, if the guy's going to order wine, there's only one person he'd let look at it, and it's him. And he
does it
in a really classy way, right? Even if you're out with him now, like, he just orders the wine in a classy way and knows what he's doing. But anybody else, I think truly we were more, you know, beer, bourbon kind of drinkers back then. But if wine was in, everybody just split the tab. It was just split the tab, whatever. You didn't piece off a meal. Like, you didn't go, hey, I had the Caesar salad and I had this. If you ever did that, you'd never be in the group again.
Did anyone walk out when the bill came? You know, I see this a lot from time to time, where people walk out and go to the bathroom as the bill is about to lay on the table.
That was Ron.
Hey, Bob, they wouldn't be on the team flight home if they did that. They'd be done. They're out. So, no, nobody ever. And, you know, and if you're a guy that didn't drink wine and they had wine on the table, you just did your piece. Whatever the bill was, you split it, you know, that kind of thing. But they're also aware, those guys specifically, and that's why I said they were all unassuming. They, knew where they were at. They were great, great players. And if I was out in that group, and that's the group I'm still, they're the guys I'm still around today. So it's not like, but they're always aware that if it was a nice, a big night out, they would be the first ones to go, hey, you don't, you know, this is more on us kind of thing. But really, you don't, if you're going out with them, you, whatever the bill is, that's the bill. And you all split it up. That's what it should be. And nobody, if anybody ever had alligator arms, Bob, or walked away,
alligator truly, arms,
they would truly never survive in that group of any of the groups of the guys who are on our team. They would let them have it, and that's almost grounds to trade somebody.
What was the per diem back then, Jay? And what do you think it is now?
Okay, so I can give you the range. So when we were per diem, I think it was like $100 a day back then. Now, that's why I always say when you hear guys, now I don't know what it is now. I really don't. I'm not sure. It was $100 a day in the NHL. So when you went on the plane, they hand you an envelope. I remember John Welday and the guys and our strength coach, he'd be there with an envelope with the coaches, and they'd hand you an envelope. If you're going for 12 days, they hand you $1,200 and you did your thing.
Wow.
And then, but this, the difference, the one thing, if you, that's why guys who are in the minors really felt like when you got a per diem cash, you felt like you know hit the lottery, because if you're in the minors, believe me, the International League was $5 a day. You didn't even have enough money to buy McDonald's after a game. I'm not even joking. I'm being very serious.
Wow.
It was low in the International League. The American League maybe was 20, and the International League was 5. And that was almost like. That's what the International League was like. But when you got to the NHL and they handed you that cash, and, you know, back then, you know, contracts, minimum salaries were $100,000, not almost $1 million like they are today. So I'd assume the per diem went up accordingly. And it's like when you go on the road and they take out your, you know, you have pregame meals, that's all comes into play as well. Our pregame meals are something that every player would tell you they miss when they're done playing hockey, because it's a fun, that's when you're in as a team, you're all having your pregame meal. Guys are having a good time with it, but the meals are always really pretty good.
Limits, do you have any questions for Jay about life on the road for an NHL player?
Man, I have multiple. Best city to go to outside of Pittsburgh, Jay?
I already asked him that. He said Philly.
I know, but like you asked him.
I said Philly as far as the rink, but Chicago, New York, Chicago. But we weren't in. I'd say New York and all the. When you would go out in a Canadian city, you really knew it. Like, again, we stayed the night. I talked about this before, that when we played, we chartered, right? I mean, we didn't charter. We flew commercial. So we went in on a Wednesday, played Thursday night, and would stay the night Thursday, then come home Friday or go to the next city. So different. So, but when you're out in those cities, they're all like Chicago's or Toronto, Montreal, Quebec was a unique, you know, all these kind of things. But New York and Boston were pretty... They're great cities to be in and playing, you know, going in as a team and playing a game,
Joe,
against
my
the
question,
Rangers or Boston.
Joe, my question pertained to the cities, not the rinks.
So did Bob.
All right,
that is still a good answer.
Can I get one more before we ask a legitimate hockey question here? Because,
sure.
And this would be, I know baseball players because I've helped them get on different golf courses. When they come into town, you know, they're here for three or 4 days, and they don't have to do anything until it's time to report. They want to play golf in the morning. Did anyone ever bring golf clubs on hockey trips? Let's say you're on this one that Pittsburgh's on right now, seven-game trip. You have some downtime in Anaheim. Golf ever an option?
No, not. I mean, Tom Brasso would have been the one guy that would try and do that, but no. Golf clubs are not. It's such a different sport. Probably, Bob, right? A different sport and not enough time. But no, we never... Never did that. Now I can tell you this, and this is I remember being on it. We were on a West Coast swing, and we were in Vancouver coming down to L.A., and we had a couple days. And I do know, Ulf Samuelsson was suspended, and I was suspended for this game, the West. And he and I went and played golf and went to Sherwood Country Club.
Oh, good.
Which is where they held. Shark Shootout,
yep.
Bob. You remember they used to do the Shark Shootout?
Absolutely.
Sherwood Country Club at that time had no homes around it. It was 60 members, and we got out there and played and rented clubs and stuff like that. But that was the only time ever, because we knew how many games we were off for. You know what I mean? Like, I would have never ever entertained that ever. But I do know that is the one time I can never say I never did do it. I did it with Ulfie Samuelsson, and we played till it was dark, and it was a beautiful. That place was amazing.
They want you to be suspended more often.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think Ofie timed things really well. He did know how to do things. He was probably one of the best at that.
Man, when I covered the Penguins, I traveled with the team for, I think, a year and a half till Craig Patrick kicked me off the plane, basically said no more media. It was unbelievable, Jay.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built. It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You get on the plane, they hand you stuff, you watch a movie. Then after a game like in New Jersey, I'd hurry up and do my story, and I'm back home at the whatever the airport, the side airport over there. And then I was back home in bed by 1 a.m. after a game. But you traveled commercial, didn't you guys?
Yeah, so this came up the other night. It was a topic that we talked about the other night. We were commercial. We flew. We had every aisle seat on every US Air flight we ever went. When we would get on... We would go through the airports. I mean, we did like everybody else. We go through the airport, walk through, get our tickets, whatever, and travel like everybody else. But we had every aisle seat on those U.S. Air flights. That's what we did. We had aisle seats, and then so many times. And I've talked about this, which was very unique, which they don't have that. You don't see that anymore. But Minneapolis was a hub. So many teams used to cut through Minneapolis. So we'd fly into Minneapolis to go to Winnipeg or something like that. Well, every time we're walking through the Minneapolis airport, you'd pass 3-4 other teams in the Minneapolis airport. Like we're crossing all of us. And everybody kind of looked the same. And for some reason, it was like a trench coat and we had a bag over your shoulder. And you could see everybody coming for a mile, whatever it was. But we would cross paths in the airport. So the part about this story about players today, listen, how they travel and how they get to play. It's still a grind, but it is a wonderful way. As I said, it was 3 days for us to play one game. They have two. Like you said, Joe, you were back home by 1 a.m. That was not us. We would play. We could fly in the day before, play on Thursday, and travel Friday morning. And it's a big difference. But I do think some parts, these teams today miss out on the camaraderie that you build. And I'm not one that always says, oh, I missed it. The locker room. You've never really heard me say that. Everybody misses all phases of the game, but I do believe a night after a game, you have a big win or whatever it is. You played in Philly with a big win in Philly, and we're all going out, taking it in, because you're wide awake anyway. You're wide awake. You don't want to go back to your room, so everybody goes out for a little bit and has a good time, and you get on your flight the next day. And as long as you kind of go back and do your work. Everybody was respectful about it and respectable when we did our thing out on the town. And I think teams today are missing that. And I think this trip is good for the Penguins right now, because they're on the road. They're winning a couple games. They're enjoying it. As long as you keep doing it, it makes the trip better. But it's good to get away just for those reasons and the flights that I mentioned, because they don't get to do what we did before. They don't have as many days out after a game. They're limited with that. And I think it's something that teams need.
Bob, do you have a hockey question for Jay before we let him go? This was great, Jay. It's okay to veer off the path once in a while. This was wonderful.
I want you to rank Nedeljkovic's goalie goal.
Yes.
You've seen a few of them, and I know that he's kind of made it an art form. Everywhere he's been, he's gotten one. I thought it was a little risky at the time, but I also thought it was very interesting that he knew the guy was going to hit him, and he still had the wherewithal to make a beautiful shot high above everyone. Nobody could knock it down.
Yeah, I think the one thing, and I think he's so good at handling the puck. And we said the same thing about Tristan Jarry. That was one of the things about the two goalies, that when one went in, they had the same luxury of having a goaltender that can handle the puck. Well, he's very good at it. And I do think, you know, I think when you're playing a game and you're going to take, you know, he saw, I think it was Sam Lafferty, by the way, who, when I talked about the other night where when it happened, Sam Lafferty came into him. And I think as a player, you know, there's certain things, until you see a film of it, you don't realize that a player was, you know, just about to drive into you sometimes. I think that's what made it, you know, I think that was one of the better ones that I've seen. And now we've watched a couple on TV. I know Marty Brodeur has done a number. But I think the one thing about it, why he took that chance, Bob, is that he had a two-goal lead. I think he might have looked at it differently if it was a one-goal game. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
If it was a one-goal game, he might not have done that. I think that's something that caught, if I'm correct, I think that's something that caught Jarry, not the playoff one, but another one where, you know, if you have a one-goal lead, you better be smarter about it. If you're going to take that shot, you cannot be selfish and realize what the score of the game was, because for them the points are extremely important. But I think he knew, and I think he even mentioned that in his interview. It was a two-goal lead. He could take that shot, and he did it, and it was great. And I think everything that went with it, I think what makes it even the best was the Jarry situation going down to the minors. He's the guy now, right, with Blomqvist. That's the things that made it even better. And he gets an assist to go with it. And, you know, everything all, and they get the big win. And he was outstanding that night. So all those pieces, I do think, make that situation one of the best that I've seen.
Jay, we'll talk next week. Let's see what the Penguins do with teams they should beat. There aren't many left that you say, hey, they should beat. Three of these four they have to beat. And then we'll get back into the current day stuff. But thanks for taking a trip down memory lane. That was great.
Fun. Thanks, Jay.
Jay, guys, great to talk to you. Have a good one, all right?
You too.
There he goes, Jay Caulfield. That was a lot of fun, Bob.
It's good to do that once in a while.
Yes.
We talk the same hockey stuff over and over, and there's going to be more time for that. But I think it's fun, and people like to listen to what it was like then and now.
They flew commercial. I was just reading a book about the Showtime Lakers by Jeff Pearlman. They flew commercial.
I saw that.
Imagine
that
running into Kareem in an airport.
I mean, you could watch. It used to be, you would see, he's right, you'd see guys coming and going different directions and
right.
Say, hey, what's going on? And you pass each other, try to get a coffee and go on to your next flight. Things change. And today, I didn't know, though. I mean, I knew they had, and back then it was $100. I guarantee you today it's more than that.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of daily spending. It would be nice to go on the road like that.
Have them hand you a $1,200 check?
Do we do that in media?
Or cash?
Does the broadcast industry allow that anymore? It would be nice. Here's a little envelope.
Wow.
Spend it as you will.
I enjoyed life on the road. I was young. I was young and foolish then, Bob. Young and single. I mean, it was great.
Oh, there's a story or two there. He brought that up.
I didn't mean that.
He got some money in my pocket. He's a dangerous man because he's got some money in his pocket, Joe Starkey. On the road, single boy. I see where you're going.
No, that wasn't where I was going.
No, it was.
The
your mind took
you're
you
not
there.
Tied down with a marriage and a family.
Again, there we go. Got some money in my pocket. He's a dangerous man. He doesn't have a woman. He's just going on. Just look at him. I want to know. I want to see that Starkey book.
That is not what I meant.
Yes,
I meant
it is.
Was the perfect time in life to just, you have nothing.
And why was it perfect?
Because you'd be on the road having
and
fun
single
out
with some
all
money
the time.
In your pocket.
I had never seen, really, I don't know that I'd been west of the Mississippi. I don't think I had, let alone, you know, Western Canada or up into Montreal Joe. Was a place. Okay, fine. LA,
you can camouflage
Arizona.
This with your cultural enrichment. You're looking at all these things, but the truth be known is that you're in a French city, you know, and you're walking along with some money in your pocket. You can say it. It's okay.
No, Bob, I was afraid of girls and women my entire life. That didn't change then. What do you think? I was out there on the road like, I don't know, some Romeo? No.
It was an episode of The Bachelor on a Friday or Saturday night for Joe Starkey. Well,
let me give you a little nugget here. One night I went to a movie by myself in Montreal, and it was The Rookie, the one where the guy pitches the ball on the side of the road and they time it. You know that story about the old guy with the race. That was my life on the road in a movie theater in Montreal by myself.
Okay.
If that's what you want to tell us, I'm in.
Nah.
Fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township.
He pulled a pony.
Visit
he pulled
them
a pony.
At
South. Going to the Reeds after Malzi says something and Pony doesn't want to address it.
Here's what I do know is that not a lot of people in the history of this country have been a beat writer. Like, it's a very unusual job, and it's pretty cool to be doing it. It's pretty cool. To be on the road.
It's also very stressful. There are a lot of deadlines that come and go, and it's difficult. People don't understand that aspect of it. But yeah, it is. I mean, you get to do what you've always wanted to do and travel with a team and cover a team. That's terrific.
It was incredible. And I was going, you know, it was a 2-1. It was Molinari and Dayon at the Post-Gazette against little old me every single day. And that was back in the day of physical newspapers. So you'd get a call in the morning, hey, Molinari just broke a story that Yager asked for a trade and it would ruin my entire day in wherever, Montreal, Chicago, the day wrecked. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was a pressurized job in that way. I always thought I was going to get fired every single day.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.